Rockland, USA.
From Rockland USA Studios in Washington, D.C., this is Rock on the Money. Time to talk about saving, investing, and protecting all those hard-earned monies. We're here to give you ideas, answer your questions, keep you updated on your path to retirement and financial independence without any fees or commissions. It's kind of what we do here. I'm Craig with Amanda, your financial coaches, and we're so thankful you've joined us. You can call us 24 hours a day, 989-888-ROCK, 989-888-7625. Leave a voicemail or text us with your questions or comments, and we'll answer them on the show. If you're too shy for all that, you can always email us to podcast@rocklandusa.com. Hello, Amanda. How you doing, girl?
Hi. I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. January's doing okay. Everything's great. I have no complaints.
Well, that's good to hear.
I'm older now. Had my birthday. Yep.
That's right. Happy birthday.
Yeah. Yay me. I'm getting closer to Social Security.
Well, that's quite a goal.
And Medicare and all that other stuff. Anyway. Hey, what we got on this show?
We've got a great social media question. We also then have a large segment today on baby step number two. The Dave Ramsey baby step segment today is on paying off debt.
Yes.
And that'll be our show today.
That's the biggest step of all of them. That's the crucial one.
That's anyway, pretty much why people, you know, look to the Dave Ramsey program, really.
Yeah, they want to get out of debt. And I have a lot of people messaging me privately and they want to get out of debt. And people are serious. I asked them, I said, look, because I'm a coach, financial coach under Dave Ramsey. I'm like, look, you know, you either are serious about this or you're not. If you're not, then please, you know, don't.
Yeah, we talked about that in the past. You can't do Dave Ramsey-ish.
Yeah, no. And a lot of coaches have this problem where you tell people what they need to do, they don't want to do it. It's like, well, my time is valuable. I don't have time for this. So
you know what that reminds me of? I've caught this great new show on, I think it's on CNBC. So I love watching The Profit, number one, with Marcus Lemonis.
He is amazing.
I love it. But there's a new show. I talk about trying to help people who sometimes don't want to help themselves. Alex Rodriguez, you know, like the baseball player, has a new show called Back in the Game. It's great.
Yes. And he's good friends with the Profit guy, too.
He is. Yeah. Yes. He had
they both went to the same school, I think.
They did. Yeah. Down in South Florida.
Yeah.
He finds people, a lot of athletes spend all of their money that they make, all these millions of dollars, they just blow it. And then they're in huge debt. He goes and tries and helps set them up with the tools to get out of debt and to, you know, get back in the game, like the name of a show. Anyway, sidetrack. You know,
I think that's a great recommendation for people to go check out that show, because
I think it's great because you think all these people who are making millions of dollars are so lucky, but in reality, they're just like you and me. And if they didn't have the tools and skills to know how to manage that money, it just all went out the window.
And they blew all their money. And it's interesting to watch this show because the people that had money, they blew it all, and then he tells them what they need to do, and they don't want to do it.
It's the
same thing as doing the baby steps. So it's like, well, you want me to do what? It's like,
I saw the one with like Ryan Lochte, you know, the
swimmer. Oh my, yeah, that was a great episode. Yeah. And the wife, his wife.
Yeah.
Oh my God. You need to go watch that episode because she did not want to downgrade her car. Remember that? Yeah. It was a Mazda. She goes, I can't drive that.
So that's going to be really relevant in our topics today. But anyway, I just think it's a great show, entertaining. And, you know, you get to know a little bit more about A-Rod. And he obviously had to pull himself back up after some of his own troubles. No,
he's paying it forward by helping out these other athletes. And I love that. I love that stuff. That's what we're doing. We're paying it forward as well. So
exactly.
Social media question.
Yes.
What you got?
What do you have?
So I don't know who asked this question. I didn't put down the name.
You want me to read it?
Go ahead and read it.
Sure. It says, I just finished watching this Dave Ramsey YouTube video on cars. He says that you should not have a total car value more than half of your household income. This seems crazy to me. For me, that would be a $75,000 car. Do you guys have a rule of thumb for how much you're willing to spend on a car? Well, first of all, I don't think he's thinking that this advice applies to people with $150,000 in income.
wait a minute. Hold on. Let's back it. What do you say? He goes, that seems crazy to me. What do you say?
For me, that would be a $75,000 car.
Oh, so he's assuming because he makes $150,000, he has to go out and buy. Is that what he's saying?
Yeah, I think that's what he's saying. But again, Dave Ramsey is saying it should not be more than half your income. So obviously he's not saying it's a minimum price. But.
Oh, my goodness, dude. Seriously. No, that's not what it meant. No.
Yeah. Well, if you're making $24,000 a year, you don't want a car that's more than $12,000. It's a guidance, not a rule. It's like when you watch Pirates of the Caribbean and they're saying, you know, the Pirates Code is not so much a code as a guideline.
Yeah. Please don't do that. If you're making $150,000, please don't go out and buy a $75,000 car. Please. Now, for me, Amanda,
yeah,
even though my net worth is seven in the sevens,
yeah,
I drive a Honda Civic. Mm-hmm. I do. And I pay cash for it. It costs me under $25,000, right? Mm-hmm. The vehicles that I buy, I want them
to
last.
You run them into the ground, yeah.
Well, not into the ground. They, you know, if you buy any vehicle nowadays, they can easily go 10 years. There's a lot of people that don't want to drive a 10-year-old vehicle. You know, I drive them at least 10 years before I even consider getting another one. And I can usually get another 2-3 more years out of it before it's like, okay, now I'm starting to have little problems with it. But typically, I never have a car repair. I can't remember the last time I had a vehicle repair. All I do is I change the fluids, brakes, tires, and what else? Oh, the belts on the, you know, the belts. That's it.
Yeah.
There's nothing else to do on the car. I mean, it's, you know.
You've gotten lucky.
When you buy something like that and you drive off the lot, before you hit the next intersection, you've lost $5,000 off the price of any vehicle brand new. You've lost that much value.
I don't buy new. I have my car's a certified used. I'm not going to tell you what kind of car because you'll just make fun of me. But
No, I already know what it is. I know what you're driving. I know what it is. It's a nice vehicle, though. But you bought it used.
But it's not flashy. It's not flashy.
I know. But a new vehicle loses 60 to 70% of its value in the first 4 years on average. So if you do buy a 2-year lease vehicle, someone else got fleeced. Let them get fleeced. Okay.
Yep. That's my
opinion. Buy the 2 to 4 year old vehicle. You've pretty much taken care of the depreciation. From that point on, it depreciates at a much slower rate. That's the way you buy a vehicle. It was a Dave Ramsey question. And a lot of people don't like to hear this part. Don't buy a new vehicle unless your net worth is at least $1 million.
Yeah.
And because you're hurting yourself to generate wealth on the long term when that money could have been used to build up your wealth. Once you get to $1 million, then he says, look, if you want to go out and buy a vehicle, still sticking with that 50% rule, but you've kind of earned it at that point. If you're debt free, then you know what? Then you can start rewarding yourself. But until you get to that point, you know, try and do what Amanda did. Buy used.
What? Oh, I was going to say, what did I do?
What did you do now?
I have a certified used and I've had it for a number of years and there's no debt on it. So
And
it is one that has very low maintenance and easy to maintain.
And what we want to do is we want to budget this purchase of the vehicle over time in our budget by putting in another bucket. So you do have your $20,000 to $30,000, then you walk in, write the check. Can you imagine never having a car payment, Amanda?
I can because I don't have a car payment.
I don't have a car payment. It's amazing because the average car payment is over $500 a month for how many months? 84 months.
84.
That is insane, people. You know how much money you could bank away? You could be a millionaire if you didn't have these crazy car payments.
And you're paying for two cars by that point with the interest.
Well, a lot of people are paying it twice. You're right. They're paying over $1,000 in payments.
What if you need a car, though, to get back and forth to work and you don't have the option of waiting until you have enough money built up to go pay cash? I mean, some people have to finance.
Okay, so if you have to finance, here's the rule that I go with. I know Dave Ramsey would never tell you to finance a vehicle, okay? If you can't afford the payment based on a 42-month loan, you have too much vehicle.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. So pretty much
just over 3 years.
Right. So go 36. Don't go 48. Keep it under 42. If you can't afford that monthly payment,
yeah,
3.5 years. If you can't afford that payment, you probably have too much vehicle. So that pretty much goes along with the 50% rule.
I mean, you shouldn't just be thinking about the payment either. I mean, car insurance every month. Yeah.
Right. So
don't max yourself out.
Right. So if you absolutely have to do it, you want to do 42 a month or less. And you want to get that paid off as soon as possible by doing side gigs, second job, whatever you need to do. You want to get rid of that debt because now we're back to the debt snowball, which we're going to talk about coming up next. I went and did some research based on this question because I remembered back in the day, back in the 80s, when Bill Gates was running Microsoft. He had all this money, but he was still driving an old Honda Accord to his work every day. And I thought, let me go figure out what all these billionaires are driving out there.
To
try and get bring this to perspective. And I want
you driving what Ryan Lochte's wife is driving.
No. So what I'm thinking of is if you guys are driving a vehicle that's worth more than what these billionaires are driving, you're driving too much vehicle.
Yeah.
Now that let the hate mail roll in. Podcast at rocklandusa.com. So let's start out with the first one. We can alternate. I'll do the first one, then you can read the next one. So according to Bloomberg, Amazon CEO and founder Jeff Bezos, of course, when he owns 12% stake in Amazon currently, and he's currently worth $115 billion with a B, okay? 2 years after the company went public, it was on the stock market, okay? He was still driving a 1996 Honda Accord, and at that time, the MSRP in 1996 was $17,000 for that Honda Accord.
But what year did they go public?
In 94.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I remember shopping at Amazon before it was called Amazon. I think it was called Blue Nile or something like that.
Yeah.
Something
But was it a new Honda Accord or was it used by that point?
I think we're reading into it. I don't know.
Oh, okay. All right. Anyway, it was $17,000.
But yeah, it was a $17,000 vehicle.
Yes. And it was a Honda Accord.
I remember Bill Gates was doing the same thing. He was driving a Honda Accord to Microsoft headquarters up in Washington State. So. Anyway.
Yeah. And then according to Forbes, Facebook and Asana co-founder Dustin Moskovitz, I see why you wanted to switch back and forth.
Well, I couldn't pronounce his name. let the brainiac. You're the lawyer. You figure it out. I'm a stupid fireman. What do I know?
Dustin Moskovitz has a net worth of $13.4 billion. Despite his 3% stake in Facebook, he stays frugal. In 2011, he was profiled in the Seattle Times, and they said that he drove a Volkswagen R32 at the time, and the manufacturer's retail price for that in 2008 was $32,000.
I think a co-founder of Facebook can drive a $32,000 vehicle.
Yeah.
That's crazy. All right, so the next one, according to Reuters, co-founder of Google, Larry Page, everybody knows Larry Page, he earned a spot as the 8th richest person in the world, Amanda.
Yeah.
And although he had an annual salary of just $1, he's one of those CEOs that chose to just take a dollar. His net worth was still $53.5 billion as of October 2018. Larry Page drives a Toyota Prius, by the way. And the 2019 base price for a Toyota Prius, $23,700.
And he's saving on his gas bill, too.
That's less than my Civic. Now I feel bad. Anyway.
According to CNN, Warren Buffett, the Oracle of Omaha, is well known for his frugal ways, of course. The billionaire CEO of Berkshire Hathaway has pledged to donate 99% of his net worth of $84.2 billion in his lifetime. He drives a 2014 Cadillac XTS. Now, I totally see that. He definitely looks like a Cadillac kind of guy.
Why? Because he's old? I might as well just take me down to the Cadillac dealership while you're at it.
The price for a new one is $23,500. Before his 2014 Caddy, he owned a 2006, guess the brand, Cadillac.
Cadillac, of course. Old man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And lastly, we have, according to CNBC, Alice Walton. She's one of the heirs of the Walmart fortune and the second wealthiest woman in the world, Amanda.
Hmm. Instead Who's the of first? Do we know?
I don't know.
Okay, I'll find out. You go on.
Yeah, yeah. Google it for me.
I will.
Hey, I got Google Home thing sitting right here. Hey, Google, who is the wealthiest woman in the world?
It says Françoise Bettencourt Myers.
On the website,
yep, for Bettencourt Myers. Of L'Oreal. She's also the chairwoman of her family's. Okay, Google, stop. Hey, yeah. Google, stop.
Of note, Mackenzie Bezos is not included because she gained her individual wealth of $37 billion after the 2019 rankings were published.
Ah, from the divorce.
The divorce, yeah. Anyway, bah, carry bah. On.
Bah, bah. So Alice Walton, she decided not to work at Walmart like her two other brothers. She decided to curate art and reportedly has an art collection worth hundreds of millions of dollars. She spent part of her $51.6 billion net worth on her 2006 Ford F-150.
I love it. King that's Ranch, such an Arkansas thing to do.
But it is a King Ranch pickup.
Oh, well, that's a nice one.
Yeah, of course. According to a 2008 Fortune article, the MSRP for the truck that year was $40,000.
Yeah, my husband has a F-150.
That's cheap. Compared to the F-150s that are going out there today. But anyway, that's the most expensive of all these billionaires is a $40,000 pickup truck. So guys, everyone out there, if you're paying more than that for a vehicle, these billionaires, they could have went out and bought anything. Yeah. And you're out there paying how much for your vehicles? You don't have even $1 million put away. So just think about that. Why are you buying a vehicle? Who are you trying to impress? It's just not worth it, really. It's keeping you from living your best life. It really is. Enough of sounding like dad. Let's take a quick break. And then we'll get into the next topic because it's a big one. It is the one that's going to change your life, everybody. Baby step number 2, paying off debt. Womp womp. Coming up right after this. Stay tuned. You're listening to Rock on the Money. Website is rockonthemoney.com. Don't forget to call us and leave us your voicemail questions so we can use them on the show. We would love to hear from you.
You would love to hear from you. And it'd be a great break from our voices.
You know what? I so much would rather hear people say their questions for us so we're not reading them. It just sounds better. It really does. So call us 989-888-ROCK, 989-888-7625. We try to make it easy for you. We went out and bought a phone number. I actually paid for that phone number, Amanda. Yeah. 989-888-ROCK. So there you go. Hey, baby step number 2. Pay off all your debt except for the house using the debt snowball, Amanda.
All right. As opposed to the avalanche.
Avalanche, yeah. So here's a couple of quick statistics about debt, okay? I'm not going to bore everybody with a bunch of statistics, but these are relevant to what we're talking about here. The average household income out there is $56,000, okay?
Okay.
I want everybody out there, you're listening to this podcast, you're probably working out, you may be driving. If you're driving a car, don't do this because I want you to close your eyes. So if you're driving down the road.
I don't think they should close their eyes if they're working out either.
That's true. You can fall off a treadmill. But think about 10 houses.
With your eyes open.
Yeah, with your eyes open. She's really worried about you guys, everybody. Amanda is worried about your health right now. Imagine 10 houses on your street right now. Think of 8 of them out of the 10 and all the vehicles sitting in their driveways and all that. On average, 8 out of 10 of those houses on your street, those people are living paycheck to paycheck, Amanda.
Yeah, or it could include you. Yeah. It
could include me, but it's not me. I guarantee it's not me. Now, if I had neighbors, we've been through this before, Amanda. If I had neighbors, Which I do.
I thought we just said if you had friends before.
Well, there's that too. Anyway, 64% of Americans can't even cover that $1,000 emergency fund we talked about in baby step one.
Yeah.
64% of all Americans on average. 24% of Americans waste 24%. That's weird. 24% of Americans waste 24% of their take-home pay on consumer debt.
Like credit cards.
Yeah, credit cards. Everything but a mortgage. That would also include your cars, your boats, all that stuff.
Boats.
That's insane. Boats. We're going to get to boats here in a second. Just like we talked about baby step one, you should have already stopped all contributions to your 401k, no matter if there's a company match. We're going to do this all in as quickly as possible. All money extra from your budget. You scrutinized your budget. You took out everything you don't need to be paying for. All that money is going and attacking this debt.
Yep.
There's two different ways that people have heard about paying off their debt. There's the debt avalanche.
Yes.
And the debt snowball. You know what the avalanche is, Amanda. What is that?
The avalanche is taking your debt with the highest interest rate and paying that one down first. And then once that's paid, then you apply all of that money to the next highest interest rate debt.
Right. And some people will do that for the biggest balance also. All right.
Yeah.
So they're doing it that way. And because mathematically, it is the faster way to pay off the debt. So
and you pay less money in interest usually.
Right. Right. And so that's what it is. So you're actually paying more of it towards the debt. However, the debt snowball is the complete opposite. We're listing out all of our debts, smallest to biggest. And what we're going to do is we're going to pay the smallest ones first, which is completely opposite of what all the mathematicians, the statistical people, they're like, oh, that's not the way to do it. That's going to cost you more money. However,
but there's a but.
Yeah, that's a lawyer in you. The but, the reason why we do this, personal finance is 80% psychological, 20% the mechanics. This is where the psychological part comes in. I kind of liken this to being, well, it is January, Amanda, trying to lose weight. So if I'm doing this diet and I'm working out, I want to see something happen in a week or two, right?
Right.
I'm standing in front of the mirror.
Otherwise, you quit.
I stand on the scale. If I'm not seeing a change, what am I more likely to do?
Go back to your old ways.
And that's why most diets fail, right?
Yep.
People like, I'm not seeing anything happen. This is BS. I'm not going to do it anymore. Same thing happens. And this is very common with paying off debt. People are trying to do the biggest interest rate, the biggest balance. And if you do that, of course, it takes you longer to pay the biggest balance. It can take you much longer. And you're not winning. You just see the number going down, but like, this is too hard. And and I've tried it myself,
it's
Amanda.
It's discouraging. It's very discouraging.
I've been there. It's not fun. It's discouraging. And you don't feel like you're getting anywhere. In contrast, if you're paying off the $1,000 debt first, then the two, then the five, then the 10, then the student loan that's at 30.
You get momentum.
I'm telling you, because this is the way I did it. I paid off the little ones first. I'm like, wow. I have an account at PenFed and a couple loans were there. And as I'm paying them off, they're disappearing from my list. I'm like, this is pretty cool. And then you actually do feel good about it. You're like, you know what? I can do this. You pay off another one. Then you're taking all that. Now, of course, we're paying minimums on all of them as we're doing this, by the way.
Right.
We're not ignoring a loan. We're just adding all the extra to the smallest ones. And I'm telling you from personal experience, this works. It is a mental thing. And you do have all these wins as you go along.
Yeah. No, I did the avalanche. I had a number of student loans and I did the avalanche, but most of them were similar in balance size. So it wasn't really a big difference. So there wasn't going to be a quick win on any of them.
I gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. And so for me, it was easier to do the avalanche. And then, it was encouraging once the first one was paid off. After that, the rest just kind of come down quickly.
To do this, we're working a second job. We're delivering pizzas. We're selling things
that
we're not spending. We're not in the restaurant unless we're working there.
Right.
I love that one. That's my favorite. We're selling things in our house that we don't need. We have
live old things. We're not financing our underwear.
Nope. We're not. Yeah. We're not filling out credit card applications. We're knocking out debt. And the quicker you do this, the faster we get back to getting ready for retirement. Okay. So right. it's all hands on deck. Everybody in the house has to be on board. Your kids need to understand we're not doing vacations. We're doing staycations this year. We're doing all of that.
Yeah.
It's the way it is. And the sooner you get all that paid off, we're not going back. And I'm telling you, the small wins will pay off. Now, let's look at the items that we're paying off. Let's say we have a car loan, Amanda, and the loan is $30,000, $40,000.
Oh, ouch.
And our income is what we say earlier in this episode. We have, too much vehicle.
$56,000?
Yeah, we have too much vehicle. Okay. Now, if you can't pay off that car, this is the rule that they have out there. If you can't pay off some of your debts within 24 months, all hands on, you need to sell that debt. Meaning, if I have a car that I can't pay off in 24 months, we're selling the car and we're going to downgrade the car. We're going to buy an old beater.
Yep. Now, and there's plenty of them out there that are really good.
Now, this is the part, in my opinion, that people fail because that car is sitting out the driveway. Your neighbors all see it. And all your friends know you have it. And all of a sudden you sold your Lexus. And all of a sudden now, I shouldn't use Lexus, should I? You sold the Lexus.
All right. He put me out there. I have
okay,
a Lexus.
Hold on. Let's back. I sold the BMW.
I did sell my BMW. I traded down to a Lexus.
Yeah. Wow. No, I think you traded up personally. Yep, that's my opinion.
My I did because the Lexus is much cheaper to maintain.
But you sold off your nicer vehicle and you downgraded down to a Toyota. I don't know.
Which, by the way, a Lexus is a Toyota. It's just
absolutely. But now you've downgraded to a Mazda 3 or a Toyota Corolla, Honda Civic, a Honda Fit. A lot of people, in my opinion, they can't take that status change in their view of and how people are going to look at them. A lot of people buy things because they want others to think that they have a different lifestyle. They want to feel better about themselves. They want others to think differently about them. They're worried about what people think about them. And I think this is a key that keeps people from getting out of debt. Do you really care about what that guy thinks about your vehicle at the intersection? A lot of people actually do.
I don't care. I don't care.
Well, you're driving a Lexus. Of course they don't care.
Now you've outed me as a luxury car owner.
Yes. Yes, you are.
I will say I've never cared what other people thought of me in my car. It was always about me personally. And as I know. That was my goal was to be able to afford one. And that's why it was important to me. So it's for me personally, not anyone else. It makes me feel like I've made it.
But there are a lot of people.
I'm not in debt.
But there are a lot of people that buy vehicles to impress. And that's a major problem out there. You got to make that decision, of course. And we're also going to talk about boats. Boats and swimming pools are the two things that you might as well just take your, what they say, just take your wallet and just chuck it in the water. What they say is
really the best. On me this episode. I have a pool too, you know.
What are the two best things that happen with a boat owner?
Oh, the best days are the day they buy and the day they sell.
Absolutely. So if that's something you're going to keep and you can't pay that debt off in 24 months, that's the rule. You need to sell the boat. We can always come back to that later on when you've made your net worth of $1 million or whatever down the road. Yeah. You can always rent a boat, right?
My friends have a membership with a boat club, and it's much more affordable.
Yeah, I think we talked about that in one of your Savvy Savings episodes.
Yes. Now, what I will say, though, is when I say affordable, it's still about the cost of an average car loan. So,
absolutely.
Even to be a member, part of a membership program. So I don't find, but again, it has to align with your personal goals and with your personal budget.
Yep.
For me, that's not a fit.
Yeah.
My Lexus is a fit.
but we're going to downgrade to a beater, a couple $1,000 vehicle. And this is, that's what it takes. And then you can upgrade later.
There are old beater Lexuses out there. So it's not always about the brand, Craig.
Yep. Yep. No, it isn't about it's about something reliable based on Consumer Reports. You know what I mean? Yeah. Let's say that you lost your job and you're in the middle of this. You're a gazelle.
Happened
you're,
to me.
Yeah, yep. You're gazelle intense. You're selling off your debt. All of a sudden, boom, now your income just stopped.
Yeah, I didn't have a car then. That's for yeah. sure.
So there's two scenarios when you lose a job, and you may or may not have had experience with this, where you do or do not get a severance pay.
I did not.
Okay, so in the case of not having severance pay, well, either
and
way.
And I was living paycheck to paycheck at the time, so it was a hard, hard hit.
So what do you mind saying what you did at that point before you found another job? Did you do gigs or selling? I mean, did you?
Oh, yeah. Well, I cut my spending down to practically zero.
Yeah, you were basically in survival mode, weren't you?
You were 100% in survival mode. Yep. I cut out everything, you know, cable, everything.
Yep. So
bare bones budget. Yep. Yeah. And then picked up side gigs or cash gigs. I relied on some friends for some help sometimes. I didn't have a car, so I had to ask people for rides even to go to the grocery store, or I walked.
Mm-hmm. And that's what you need to do. You want to stay away from using your credit cards, getting personal loans, all that.
I didn't even have a credit card at the time. And I couldn't even get a credit card. No one would give me one after my divorce.
A lot of people will just go onto their credit cards and start racking them up. We want to avoid that as much as possible. And then let's say you do get severance pay. What we don't want to do is use the severance pay as much as possible. We want to leave that alone. We want to still be in survival mode.
Right.
Doing all the side gigs, selling everything that's not nailed down, going out there and intensely trying to find that next job. Try and leave that severance pay alone. Of course, we're not paying debt at this point.
Right.
We're doing the minimums as best as possible. We don't want to be late.
You're just paying for your bare minimums to live.
Right. So if you had the severance pay, usually it's like 3 to 6 months sometimes. Mm-hmm. Could be a month. I don't know. Let's say all of a sudden you got another job. Now we have this bucket of money that we didn't touch because we worked gazelle intense. We want to take that money, that newfound money, and now we're going to go back into baby step two. Well, we want to make sure our $1,000 baby step one is back on track. We didn't end up using that. If you had to use it, you have to use it. Okay.
Yeah, because that's what it's there for.
It's there for. So we've got that back up to $1,000. Then we take all that severance pay and we throw it at the debt. That could potentially leapfrog you forward.
Yeah.
It could be a fair amount of money, you know, depending on what you had. I think we covered all of the aspects of the baby step two. The whole thing is we want to stay motivated. That is such a crucial point of this. We want to do it fast. Okay.
Yeah.
We don't want to drag this out, because if we're dragging it out, we're not saving for retirement.
Right.
We do not save for retirement while we're doing this. It's all hands on deck. And I'm telling you, if you listen to a lot of the Dave Ramsey program and these people are paying this stuff off in 2 years or less. And they had phenomenal amounts of debt. It's amazing.
I paid off $90,000+ in student loans in 2 years.
It's amazing what you can do if you want to do it. A lot of people,
you have to be laser focused. Like, this is your goal and you have to live and breathe it every day.
Yep. And everybody in the house has to be on board. If you don't want to do it, if you have one spouse that doesn't want to do it and you do, it's not going to work.
Now, there's really one thing I will say, Craig, though, like any diet, because you made the diet a reference earlier, analogy.
Yes.
So like a diet, you have to have built in a way for you to cheat now and then.
Yes.
So you have to have like a reward built in for when you meet certain goals that you are looking forward to, where maybe you can go out and, you know, maybe that's your goal is once a month you can go out to eat if that's important to you, you know. Because, you know, you don't want to be in a restaurant unless you work there. But if maybe once in a while that's important to you and it's going to help you stay motivated to stay on track, then that can be your so-called cheat day, you know, because without those, you're just it's really hard to stay on like an 800 calorie diet every day for 2 years. So the built-in cheats are important because you definitely want to budget for those. Otherwise, what's going to happen? You're going to have a binge weekend, right? And then you're way off track. So you want something built in that you've planned for, that's budgeted for, so that you stay on track while you're still working your way towards your goal.
Okay. Anything else?
That's it.
I think we saturated their brains enough. with this episode. There was a lot going on this episode. We've had some great episodes lately.
Yes.
We've been throwing a lot more information compacted into these episodes. I think people are really enjoying what we're doing. So thank you again, Amanda. No savings this week. I feel empty.
Well, we did empty. Talk a lot. We did sprinkle some savings throughout the episode. It just wasn't a designated segment. Yes.
Actually, it was a whole episode about savings. So
that's right.
Like I said, our three pillars are save, invest, and protect. There's a whole lot of that in there. So anyway, thank you again, Amanda.
All right. See you next time.
Don't forget to check out our website, rockonthemoney.com, for all the previous episodes. We have articles, show notes, everything right there. Plus links directly to all of the podcast platforms where you can easily subscribe to the podcast, such as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, and many others. We really do appreciate all of your support. We have a lot of gratitude that you took the time to check us out. We really do appreciate it. Send us an email and tell us what you think to podcast@rocklandusa.com. So long, everybody. We'll see you again next time on Rock on the Money. America's Rockland USA. All opinions expressed by the host are solely their own and do not reflect the views of any company, affiliates, or advertisers. Investments or strategies mentioned in the show may not be suitable for you. Before acting on any information in the show, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial or investment advisor.